Do you need help protecting your finances as you enter retirement? David Dickens of KC Financial Advisors has got you covered. Welcome to the Cover Your Assets KC podcast.
Got a great episode on the way today. This is the Cover Your Assets KC podcast. Welcome. I'm Walter Storholt alongside David Dickens, President and Wealth Advisor at KC Financial Advisors in Kansas City, serving you with an office in Overland Park. Find us online at coveryourassetskc.com. David joining us from the sunny territory of Phoenix on today's show. Arizona skies overhead. How you doing, Dave?
Yeah, it's pretty nice out here. So my mother lives out here. She's 89, and I haven't with COVID, I haven't actually seen her for 18 months. So flying into tin can for 3 hours, and then hopping into a rental car and getting out to see your 89-year-old mother didn't seem like a good idea. So Linda and I hopped in the car, and we actually drove all the way out here. And we're going to hang for a couple weeks, and actually got to watch that ill-fated Super Bowl with her and enjoyed the company, but not the game.
Well, that's quite the trip all the way out to Arizona, David. Any memorable stories from that trip across the country?
Well, luckily, no. It was pretty uneventful. We didn't hit any snow. In fact, it was nice and sunny, warm weather relatively warm in Albuquerque, where we spent the night, and so it was a pretty easy little trip, if you don't mind doing 12 hours one day and 6 hours the next day.
Yeah, it's a great point. That's a haul and takes a lot out of you, I'm sure. But sounds like you're going to have a good time out there in Arizona for just a little bit, and glad that you're getting the chance to do a little remote work. I guess that's one blessing of the coronavirus has been when you do need to go somewhere, want to see somebody, you can kind of set up shop, and we've learned very quickly we can do that from anywhere, right?
Yeah, it is pretty amazing. You know, so at our office through COVID, I've been working. My staff and I split us all up into half. And so half of us work in the office Monday, Wednesday, the other half Tuesday, Thursday, and everybody works remote Friday. So you're working 5 days a week. It's just three of your days happen to be from your home office. And boy, with electronics the way they are today, and you know, you got your phone and you got your database all from your home computer, it makes it pretty simple. So that's what I'm doing out here. And so far, so good.
Absolutely. Well, we're all learning something new and lots of lessons to be learned from our remote work extravaganza over the past year or so. Speaking of lessons to be learned, we're going to learn a lot of them, I think, on today's show. You know, there was this thing that happened in the news a week or so ago, David, from the time that we're recording this episode. It happened with GameStop, video game sales company. They had this amazing meteoric rise through the stock market. And when we say meteoric, I mean it truly was. And it was a wild week on Wall Street. It's kind of come crashing back down since then. A whole bunch of different people kind of were in the news about this. Reddit was in the news. We heard lots of buzzwords like short squeeze during the week. Hedge funds were all up in arms about it. And then all sorts of chaos started happening after that. There were tweets flying around from opposite ends of the spectrum. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Donald Trump Jr. were in agreement on the whole issue, which was, you know, an unexpected thing to see, you know, in January of 2021. So can you give us the breakdown? What in the world happened in that week of Wall Street? I'm sure everybody at least heard a little something about it in the news.
Yeah, for sure. You couldn't hardly turn on any sort of financial news without hearing about it. So just a quick outline of the next 5 minutes. I'm going to talk a little bit about what GameStop is, what is a short seller, how does short selling actually work, and where did Reddit come in, and then what about this hedge fund that got super squeezed. So GameStop, for those of you my vintage, Walter, you've probably been into a GameStop.
You would be right. Growing up, we would take used video games there and trade them in. They'd give you a few dollars for your used games, and then you could buy other people's used games. It was like a trading post for video games.
Yeah, so you know they sell a lot of video games, whether new or pre-owned. Mm-hmm. They sell consoles like PlayStation and Xbox, and they're largely located in malls and strip shopping centers. And yep. So from somebody of my vintage, it's kind of like Blockbuster used to be back in the 80s, where if you wanted the video to watch at your home, you went to Blockbuster.
And there was a Blockbuster on every corner, it felt like, or at least every town in America had one, it felt like.
Absolutely. And then things started going digital, and YouTube came along, and they'd mail it to your house, and Blockbuster didn't happen. So that's what GameStop is. It's a location. It's probably 5,000 or more stores across the country where gamers used to go to do all this business. And frankly, I'm sure I read a story in the last week that said they did 5 $1 billion worth of revenue last year. So it's not like they're going necessarily going out of business, but their business is dramatically changing and they have to figure something out. And so that's the company that we're talking about. It's publicly traded. They have 69 million shares outstanding. And on January 1, those shares were worth about $17 a share. Write that down if you're not on a treadmill right now. But 69 million shares at about $17 a share. So what is a short seller? A short seller is usually a sophisticated investor, but it doesn't have to be, who wants to benefit from the price of a stock falling, whereas most of us try to benefit from the price of a stock rising. What a short seller does is they call their broker and say, hey, I want to sell, for instance, GameStop short. The broker has to find GameStop shares somewhere, client of theirs or otherwise, and they have to borrow those shares so that you can sell them because you don't own them. So a short sale is merely selling a stock that you don't own.
It already sounds like a risky proposition.
So you're right, because the risk is, let's say that you own GameStop at $17 and it goes to zero. Well, you lost $17 a share. But if you sell GameStop short at 17 and it goes to 34, well, you lost the $17 a share. But if it goes to 100, you lost way more than your original investment.
Someone's coming to break my kneecaps at that point.
unless you got a lot of money that you can wire into the brokerage firm. So what happened with the whole GameStop thing, so there's a kind of a chat board, I would call it, on Reddit called Wall Street Bets. And there are like 2 million subscribers to this thing, and they were looking at the most shorted stocks on Wall Street. And GameStop happened to be the most shorted stock. And the biggest short seller was a company called Melvin Capital. Now, it's a hedge fund, and frankly, how many of us love hedge funds? So to see them have a lot of trouble, it didn't really cause anybody any consternation. But Melvin Capital had sold millions of shares short of GameStop because they thought it was maybe going to zero, maybe going bankrupt. And somebody on this Reddit board posted an analysis that said, you know, instead of being worth $17 a share or zero, I think this thing is actually maybe worth $30 or $40 a share. And then this, what's described as this army of individual investors, I don't necessarily believe that, but that's how it's described. They kind of got together and said, what if we started buying this and put a real squeeze, a real short squeeze on Melvin Capital, the hedge fund? So that's what happened. On January 2nd, GameStop was trading at about a little over $17 a share. And that meant the company was worth about $1.2 billion. By the end of January, it was trading. A morning I was sitting at my home office looking at it, it traded pre-market at $514 a share, up from 17.
I mean, that's a big increase in a very short span of time.
Incredible. So let's say that you're a short seller and you had sold 100,000 shares short on January 2nd at about $18 a share. So what your broker says is, all right, you have to put up money for us to execute that. You have to put up $1.8 million, $18 a share plus times the 100,000 shares, plus you have to put up a 50% margin just in case this thing goes sour. So you had to put up this, let's say this Melvin Capital only did 100,000 shares short. They had to put up $1.8 million plus 900,000 of kind of protection for the broker. So that was $2.7 million. 3 weeks later, not at $500 a share, but only, say, $300 a share, all of a sudden, the shares were worth $30 million. They had sold them short at $1.8 million, and their margin is now, let's call it 25%, because it's maintenance margin. All of a sudden, they had they owed $37.5 million, and they'd only invested $2.7 million. They were way, way upside down on this trade. And so the Wall Street Bets people on Reddit, they were cheering and they kept adding more and more, buying more and more shares to drive the stock price higher and higher, increasing the pain on Melvin Capital and other hedge funds that had sold this thing short. So how bad was it for Melvin Capital? Well, in January, they lost $4.5 billion. Now, they had to go borrow $2.75 billion from other investors just to stay solvent. So this is why it was a story, because everybody on Wall Street was super entertained by this thing. It was described as the little guy on the street buying these shares and making them go higher. But honestly, the little guy on the street doesn't have enough money to make this thing go. And I haven't actually read anything that would tell me this. But there had to be other hedge funds that said, well, you know what? We don't even like those guys over at Melvin Capital. In fact, they jerked us around last year. Let's get in on this. And I think what happened is it was a big, entertaining event for the big money on Wall Street. I mean, Elon Musk was even tweeting about it. And so who knows where the real money came to apply the short squeeze. But anytime a stock artificially goes from 17 bucks to 50 bucks to 500 bucks in 3 weeks, something is very unusual. And then, Walter, you know, if you've been paying any attention, you also know that a week and a half later, it wasn't 500 bucks a share anymore. It was 62 bucks a share. So about as fast as it went through the roof up, it came crashing back down. So, which begs the question, who is left holding the bag here? And I think that's where a lot of senators and congresspersons and maybe the SEC start getting involved to say, not only how did this happen, but who got hurt and why did Robinhood have to stop taking orders for these shares and et cetera. So the story is continuing to unfold. The stock probably goes back to somewhere around where it was at the beginning of the year, which is 17 or 18 or 25 bucks. Anytime a stock trades up at 400, somebody bought it at 400 and 425 and 450 and 500 bucks a share. And the question is, are they still holding it at 62? So it's been a super interesting story. I think a lot of people that didn't understand what a short sale was, hopefully now understand that it's a very high risk strategy that is the exact opposite of purchasing shares like in your 401k or your IRA rollover or in your brokerage account. You buy shares of stock all the time, but you almost never sell short because it's speculative trading. It's really not investing, and it can be super high risk.
Yeah, it's we can't all go out and get that $2 billion loan to float us a couple extra days when we need it, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I don't have a place I could go to borrow $2.5 billion.
It's a pretty amazing story, David. I'm sure a movie is going to be made about it. Hopefully the people who did The Big Short the 2008 financial crisis will come together and do something on this, because I know that there's probably lots of wild behind-the-scenes stories that we haven't heard about yet of, like you mentioned, yeah, it was like Build is a movement of the people, and there's probably an element to that. I think lots of individual and everyday folks were jumping on board as this thing started to get rolling, but there had to be some big money behind it as well, not just the little people were able to move the mountains that much. A few follow-ups for you in the wake of that conversation and breakdown. Do you think there's anything wrong with the investors trying to short squeeze or attack the hedge funds in a situation like that? I mean, is it a bad thing that they essentially killed off a major hedge fund in this incident?
Well, I personally don't think so. I mean, hedge fund investors tend to be people with way too much money. And so if they lost a little bit on this and maybe they learned a little bit of something, I think it's somewhat entertaining. That's certainly not a strategy that we would ever use with our clients, because it's kind of a high roller type of investment. And if you are that confident, I mean, these guys were way, way overconfident in their short position, Melvin Capital and a number of other hedge funds just like them. And so anytime you get that overconfident, you are, whether it's for the market going up or something going down, you're liable to get punched in the face every now and again by Mr. Market. And so I don't feel the slightest bit sad for Melvin Capital. Something will fill right into their place. Those big-time investors will just move their money, whatever they have left of it, to a different hedge fund and hope for better things next time.
Interesting. It is sort of a little David versus Goliath moment, it seems like. And then, you know, it wasn't just GameStop. Obviously, if we broke down the entire week and the aftermath, the podcast could stretch on quite a bit. But I think it is worth touching on. It was really just the beginning, because then as the week went on, those same investors tried the same tactics and started to rally around a few other stocks. And that's when things started to get weird. You kind of hinted to it from a regulation standpoint, because then Robinhood, one of the platforms that was purportedly being used to launch this short squeeze attack, started limiting trading, and people weren't able to buy or sell and deal with the GameStop stock, as well as other stocks started getting limited and regulated. And it kind of sparked this big debate about the game being rigged against the little guy, because here they were succeeding, and then the game changed within a day or two to help the big guys, you know, prepare for what was happening. What'd you think of that fallout without getting too far into the nuances of it?
Yeah, so there's a lot of weeds that we don't want to get into. It was kind of interesting that some of the other stocks that were really heavily shorted that then participated in that big upswing that a little bit later in January, Bed Bath & Beyond. Well, most of our listeners have probably been into a Bed Bath & Beyond, and it was a heavily shorted stock because people don't believe in its, certain people don't believe in its financial futures going forward. AMC Entertainment, well, that's headquartered in Kansas City. Everybody knows what an AMC theater is. And that was also heavily shorted. I was sitting looking at my iPad pre-market on the same morning that GameStop touched $514 a share. AMC had more than doubled in the pre-market. So that was benefiting from the exact same type of short squeeze that GameStop was. It just happened to be a local Kansas City company. Everybody understands that theaters have basically been shut down by COVID. And so it was, that was a little more entertaining to watch. The whole Robinhood thing and what Congress and SEC are probably going to want to look into, Congress mainly so they can grandstand a little bit, was why Robinhood came out after this. I think it was on the day that GameStop hit $500 a share. They came out and said, wait a minute, we are only going to take, we're not going to take any more GameStop purchases. We're only going to take sell orders. And they really tried to slow down the amount of transaction activity that was using margin, in other words, borrowed funds. And so what happened with Robinhood, they didn't do, I'm confident they didn't do anything insidious. They weren't trying to mess with the little guy. They had a problem on their own back end. When they first started, they were something, and this is a little bit in the weeds, but hopefully it's helpful. They started as something called an introducing broker. But as they got bigger, they decided to morph into a self-clearing broker. And all that, I mean, it means a lot of things. But what it really means is they have to add a lot of trading back office. They have to add systems and staff, a whole lot of plumbing that helps trades get executed and settled, meaning that they take on a whole lot more financial settlement risk and a lot more profit. So they did it for obvious reasons. But when they started getting flooded with these orders, these big time orders, they realized they didn't have enough capital. So they had to go raise $1 billion in capital just so they could continue operating with the volumes they were doing. It was a self-preservation move on their part, not some orchestrated move to disadvantage the little guy.
It's I know it could get very complex the further down that road that we go. Just to dial back a little bit more, and maybe the most important question out of all of this, were any of your clients impacted by the market's volatility that week, or maybe an individual stock's roller coaster ride that you know wreaked havoc in somebody's portfolio? Any lessons that we can all learn from building for retirement and building our portfolios and in all of what happened that week?
Well, one of the big lessons, I think, is, you know, we learn this every 2 or 3 or 5 or 10 years, is that trading is not investing. And so I have a handful of clients that either are pretty good or think they're pretty good at investing money. And so they let me invest the big portion and they keep a bit off to the side. And that's trading money. And I think that is, for somebody who's interested, I think that's a perfectly fine thing to do. But you can't trade, you shouldn't trade your retirement money. You need to trade your fund money, whether that's 5% of your portfolio or some relatively small amount, because trading can go against you really badly. And in a market like we had surrounding GameStop and AMC Entertainment, there was just a significant increase in volatility, and that caused certain other stocks to become volatile, even though they weren't involved in specifically in the GameStop story. So most of my clients' monies, I don't try to pick individual stocks. Never have. I mean, I have for myself. And sometimes they've been awesome. And other times, not so good. So I don't manage client money by picking individual stocks. What I try to do is understand the macro environment and say, are we in a confirmed uptrend or have we switched over to confirmed downtrend? And if we're in a confirmed uptrend, I mean, half of the money that I have in clients' money is just in the S&P 500, because as the market does better, as America does better, the S&P 500 will benefit. And then we have certain what I'll call satellite positions that might be more into technology or robotics or solar that would play a smaller role. But those are all well-diversified ETFs and not individual stocks. So during this whole thing, I had a few inquiries from clients, but we didn't have any impact to the portfolios that we're working with. It was all a super interesting sideshow. And the more you know about finance and the working of markets, the more interesting it was. But all said and done, January was a pretty good month. February's off to a good start, and the rest of all that stuff will shake out for those hedge funds that lost billions of dollars, and I wish them well on their next move.
Oh, absolutely. I think it is just interesting and fascinating to look back at it. And again, like I said, can't wait for the movie to come out about this in a year or two. Just learn a little bit more about it in dramatic fashion, because wouldn't you agree, there's so many storylines here that a movie could just really excel at picking apart and exploring a little bit.
It is going to be awesome, and it's going to be fascinating. I've watched The Big Short probably 7 times.
Me too. I don't know why it's got such good rewatchability, but it does. You would think that kind of show, you would think you could only watch once and you kind of would have the idea and it wouldn't be interesting again, but they somehow made that movie so well that you can watch it over and over again, and it's just an enjoyable ride the way they did the storytelling with it. I have a feeling they'll do the same thing with this one.
I hope they do, and I will watch it multiple times.
I appreciate your perspective on this, David. I know it's a little bit outside the box and a little bit different than what we normally focus on and talk about here on the Cover Your Assets KC podcast, but I thought because it had so much attention and drew so much interest for that full week, it would be good to kind of do a post-mortem on it and at least get your perspective a little bit. And hopefully you've clarified a few things for folks who might have been wondering what that was all about. And I think it's very helpful to get that background. I think the biggest thing you said is trading is not investing. And that's a lesson that sometimes takes many, many people to learn and understand. So if we can embody that out of this situation and walk away from today's episode with that lesson under our belts, I think we'll all be better off for it. So I thank you for saying that. That's a very succinct way of bringing it all together.
Well, you get a chance to learn that sometimes over and over again. And hopefully you learn it once and move on early in life, and then investing becomes your thing, and you achieve all your financial goals over time. But quick hits in this kind of stuff usually end poorly.
Yes, very true. And we saw that happen in this case for many parties involved. Well, if you have any questions about your finances and want to explore that idea a little bit more about how trading is not investing, and you want to learn more about true investing and saving and preparing for retirement, don't ever hesitate to reach out to David. You can reach him at 913-317-1414. That's 913-317-1414, or go online to coveryourassetskc.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time on the Cover Your Assets KC podcast. Investment advisory services offered through Brookstone Capital Management, LLC, BCM, a registered investment advisor. BCM and KC Financial Advisors are independent of each other.